Welcome to the Inventory Nation podcast, a show designed to bring you the incredible voices and stories of veterinary professionals coast to coast, all while helping you to manage and control your inventory. I'm your host, Nicole Claussen, coach, advisor, and champion for veterinary teams and their inventory. Joining you live from the mountains of Montana, welcome to the show. Hello, welcome back to the Inventory Nation podcast. I am so excited that you're here. If this is your first episode, thank you so much for tuning in and spending your time. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for coming back. I just love the opportunity to talk with you. So in today's episode, we are going to be talking about a very hot topic, and that is controlled substances. So in this episode, I'm so excited to be joined by my very dear friend, Lauren Forsyth. Lauren and I recently spoke together on the Controlled Substance Hospital Safety Panel at the annual Vet Partners meeting, and it was just so much fun. I was like, oh my gosh, I just have to share her brain on the show. So Dr. Forsyth is the Clinical Assistant Professor of Pharmacy and the Pharmacy Service Head at the University of Illinois Veterinary Teaching Hospital. She is also a diplomat of the International College of Veterinary Pharmacists. Dr. Forsyth graduated from the University of Findlay College of Pharmacy in 2015 and completed her veterinary pharmacy residency at Purdue's Veterinary Teaching Hospital. Following completion of her residency, she spent 3 years at the UC Davis Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital as a clinical pharmacist before coming to UIUC in 2019. Welcome to the show, Lauren. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, of course. My pleasure. So tell us your story. How did you get started in vet med? What led you to on the path that you're on?
So my parents are both veterinarians, and I grew up basically on the floor of a vet clinic. They bought their own practice right before I was born, and therefore they had work all the time. They were sole vets in the practice, and it was a 24/7 emergency practice. So I went on farm calls, and I hung out in exam rooms and growing up. And everybody always asked me if I wanted to be a vet when I grew up. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be a vet. I've grown up way too close to it. I saw it and like, that's not for me. So I liked healthcare though. I liked math, science, and I liked showing my horses. And I had a friend who had recently graduated from pharmacy school. She had time to still show her horses. She had a good salary and vacation time, so she could do so. And I'm like, okay, I could do that. I could be a pharmacist and then I can show my horses. So I went to pharmacy school with the grand plan that I was going to work in a retail pharmacy and show my horses. So off to pharmacy school I went, and it was okay. I never found an area of human pharmacy that I really loved. And then halfway through my schooling, my compounding professor said, hey, have you thought about vet pharmacy? I'm like, that's a thing? I didn't even know that existed, but that sounds perfect. And so then I went full force, okay, how can I get into this field? And let me take every opportunity I can for the rest of pharmacy school. And so I did that, was set on going into vet pharmacy at that point, and was Purdue's first resident when I finished pharmacy school. And I haven't looked back since. So I don't know that I ever would have fit into human pharmacy world. So I'm really glad I landed in the vet world.
I'm really glad that you landed in the vet world too. Oh, that's so funny. You're like, you know what? I think I've become a pharmacist. I can, you know, show my horses. I can like make enough money to do so, and I'll be happy as a clam. And here you are in a veterinary teaching hospital. So for those of you listening, when Lauren was kind of like sharing her introduction at the Vet Partners meeting, there was like a image like that she shared of the pharmacy, and it was like with bins and they all had labels on them. It made me very happy. So you are so passionate and knowledgeable about controlled substances. What kind of got your interest and excitement started there?
pharmacists, I don't know of anyone who actually sets out wanting to be good at controlled substance regulations and management. And I was definitely no exception. I knew the laws enough to pass my law exam, but I didn't feel like I was super comfortable until I didn't really have a choice. I walked into management role, and controlled substances are part of that. And I had to figure it out and learn and ask questions, and you just do it enough. And then eventually you get good at it, because the pharmacy is usually the gatekeepers to controlled substances. The management of them and knowing the regulations falls to the pharmacist a lot. And therefore, that role just sort of fell to me. And I've done it enough now that I'm like, okay, I've got this. I've figured it out. I've asked a lot of questions. I've learned a lot. And I do kind of like it now.
Yeah. I like the management side of things as far as like, you know, yeah, I think it's fun. So that kind of like brings up kind of a good question. What are some questions that you think about controlled substances that people don't ask enough?
I think they don't ask, what am I responsible for enough? And I think one of the biggest issues that we end up with is that people have these DEA licenses, and as a license holder, they can delegate a lot of the tasks to other people that they work with. They don't have to do everything themselves. However, it doesn't really matter who they choose to delegate to, the responsibility still lies with them. And I think a lot of people fail to ask what's going on under my nose with these controlled substances. Once they delegate, okay, delegate and forget. My technician manages my inventory. They're going to manage my controlled substances. Here's the license. Tell me when you need my signature. And that is setting yourself up for a lot of liability.
Yeah, that is so true. I don't think it's kind of like, oh, somebody else is doing it. I can kind of like wash my hands with it. I don't really have to worry about it. But it's like, oh, wait, no, you're actually technically still responsible.
The DEA comes looking at knocking at the door and looking at your records and finding a lot of things missing. It's not going to be the people you delegated to that are generally going to be in the fire. It's going to be the license holder.
Yes. Yes. So I think controlled substances, and also kind of to your point, so I think controlled substances is an area where most practices have a lot of confusion over, but also they're kind of afraid to ask the questions because they think it'll invite an audit. So, you know, do you have any recommendations for those who are kind of just wanting to get theirs under control, or, you know, kind of like, what's the first step really?
These controlled substance regulations are super confusing, which definitely doesn't help anybody with these issues. So what I recommend is taking a big picture step back and getting the big picture on what are we actually trying to accomplish. And really, the DEA, they are keeping tabs on every controlled substance pill that is made, and every drug that's synthesized from the time it starts through the time it ends up out of practice. Their expectation and the goal of the regulations is that you continue that tracking. So you can keep track of every pill up until it's wasted, disposed of, or destroyed, or given. And with that, you're like, well, okay, how do I track this? And their regulations are designed to give you the non-negotiables that they have, but that doesn't mean that's everything you have to do. So you have to look at the gaps and then go, okay, my end goal is being able to know how much I have of any given drug at a given time, where it is, who last accessed it, who could potentially access it, and what all patients has it been used for. And being able to track all of that. So then what records do you need to do that? And I think that helps versus trying to memorize, okay, they say I need this, this, this. Do I actually need this? Just focusing on the big goal. And knowing that the levels of checks and balances that need to be in place are going to vary by practice. Well, it's frustrating that the regulations are so gray and leave so much open for interpretation. It is also, on the flip side, a blessing, because it gives us the flexibility to determine what is practical and what is appropriate in a setting. What's appropriate and necessary in a large vet teaching hospital like I'm at is not necessarily going to be needed in a small one or two doctor practice. You still have to meet the regulatory requirements, but the extra security may not be necessary, or maybe it is. And that's going to be an analysis that needs to be done at each practice.
Yeah, I love so much of thinking about it that way. It's like, what are we working towards? What are we, you know, kind of like, what is our ultimate goal here? And then like, let's work backwards. Because I think, you know, like, for example, I was talking with somebody the other day and they're like, oh, I just keep my, you know, my controlled substance invoices. I just keep them, like, I can just download them right from the website. And I'm like, okay, yeah. But, you know, like me personally, if a DEA agent comes to the door, I don't want to have to sit there printing off 2 years worth of records. So like, you know, maybe the regulations say one thing, but maybe, you know, I guess like how your unique practice, like kind of ultimately fulfills those goals might be different. So what do you think are kind of some of those areas that many practices often overlook when it comes to controlled substances?
Well, I'm sure you'll love this one. Regular inventory checks. that's one of those areas that the regulations aren't super restrictive on how often you have to do inventory, but it's a good idea to do it more often, because if you're doing inventory once a year and you're checking and saying, okay, well, my controlled substance count is this, my logs say this, and I know a year ago that they were accurate. You have an entire year to go through trying to figure out what got off, because chances are good your quantities a year later are not going to be exact. Something is going to have gone wrong. And figuring that out over that time span is really cumbersome and really difficult. Versus if you're trying to do it for just the past month, then it becomes much more manageable to track down any discrepancies, figure out what they were, address them, and then you can meet the DEA requirement of needing to report any significant loss in a timely manner. So I recommend having a process where you check your physical count compared to your log sheets and what they say you should have on hand at least once a month. And I think that's a great place for the license holder to do that in conjunction with the person that they've delegated a lot of their controlled substance management to, so that they're both doing it together, witnessing each other, and it serves as a check-in for that license holder. A couple other things that I would add, I would say that there needs to be a comprehensive plan in place. And sometimes that requires thinking like a drug diverter. If you look around, where are the opportunities that somebody could slip drugs out and nobody would notice? And there's any point in time when you have controlled substances, there's opportunity. But depending on how your practice operates, the types of drugs you have, the volumes you have, the amount of staff you have, those opportunities may be more significant in different areas than others, such as ordering. If you don't have division of tasks with ordering and you have the same person saying, okay, I need this, I'm going to order this, I'm going to receive it, I'm going to stock it, it's really easy for that person to just order an extra bottle and pocket it, and nobody else notices for a long time. So I think it's really important to define what those divisions are going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we, you know, of course, as like veterinary professionals, we want to be able to trust our staff. And I think that, you know, trust is always super important, but it's also important to have systems and processes in place so that if a miss happens or something happens, like we know about it. I see one of my big things that I see a lot happen is like, you know, the controlled substance lockbox, the keys will just be left in it and it'll be just left open all day. Well,
yeah, that's not necessarily the most secure option.
Yeah. Like, oh, that doesn't actually secure them if the keys are in the safe and it's just left open all day.
I say hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Yes. Also, trust but verify. I've also heard that one.
Yeah, that's very true as well.
So when you started at the University of Illinois Veterinary Teaching Hospital, sorry, mouthful there. So did you kind of have an established system that you kind of came into, or did you do some work to kind of like update and renovate the controlled substance management program?
Well, at one point, there had been an established system before I came, and it had been done and developed with a lot of discussion, consultation with the DEA, figuring out what the best process was at that point in time. However, due to some staffing changes and licensure handoffs, there was a failure to have clear oversight defined, and things started to fall through the cracks. And nobody was really maintaining this program. So while it was well designed initially, things change. Technology updates, processes change. And with that, you need to continually make sure that your process still makes sense, is still practical, and still allows for the oversight you think it does. And that hadn't happened. So it has sort of gotten to be an out-of-date process at that point. And when letting the system run on autopilot means it's just going to run into the ground. So when I got here, I started to be like, there's some gaps here. I think I need to address it. And I started to ask questions. And the questions I asked seemed simple on the surface, but the answers I got would lead to more questions. And I felt like I was digging into Pandora's box, and I never seemed to reach the bottom. One answer just led to more problems. And I found all sorts of things that I didn't realize when I started at the surface of asking my questions. I did eventually feel like I got to the bottom and have now started to build back up. And it's been a process. Again, learning a lot. There's a lot of things I never would have thought of until I had to address them. I have policies that I didn't think I needed to have, but now I can go, this is the story that led to this policy. Kind of like the State Farm commercials. This happened and we covered that. Yeah. This happened and we have a policy for that now.
Yeah, I could totally see that. And I think that totally comes up and brings to a point of, you know, sometimes something might have worked, but things change. Like, we evolve, our team evolves, our team grows, it changes, our technology changes. And so I feel like it's controlled substance, especially, and inventory, really, is not one of the things you just kind of set it and forget about it. It's like you have to kind of continually reevaluate to see if it's working. Are there gaps? Are we missing things? You know, are we making sure that we're being compliant? You know, as things change, gabapentin and prescription monitoring programs, I'm looking at you specifically, you know, so it's like, how are we making sure that we're kind of like staying on top of that? And I certainly know kind of like when you're in practice day to day, sometimes when you are day to day and you're focusing on patient care and you're trying to get through being shorthanded and you have like all these challenges that are thrown at you, sometimes it can feel like, you know, like you're just trying to make it through the day, let alone, you know, try to like keep these processes revamped. But I think if, you know, you can set aside even just a small amount of time just to check in with them and say, like, is this still working? Is it still functioning? Is it not? You know, da 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 da.
Yeah. I recommend everyone have a controlled substance policy or SOP that's comprehensive. And you can have lots of different ones, or you can have one big document that covers everything. But I recommend having it documented. And I dread working on policies and SOPs. And it's just like, oh, do I have to pick this up and review it again? But I say that your controlled substance one is one that you really need to, at a minimum, every year, go through and review it, update it, make sure it still reflects what's actually being done. Because we all know we go, oh, this doesn't work. Let's change and do it this way. And the policy never gets updated. So being sure that you keep that up to date and having multiple sets of eyes on it, I recommend something like that that's so applicable to a wide variety of staff members. Gets the license holder, practice manager, person responsible for controlled substance management, as well as a few other users to look at it and say, yeah, this is what we actually do. And review that every year to make sure that you're staying up and make sure that you consider if there's better ways to do something at this point.
Yeah. It's kind of more of a living document than, you know, something that's, yeah, set it, forget it type of a thing. So what does your controlled substance program look like now? How does it function? I'm sure it's kind of like, you know, as a teaching hospital, I'm sure it's just probably more robust than, you know, kind of in clinic, but, you know, what does it kind of look like now to give others some inspiration?
There's a lot of policies and SOPs. We have so many processes defined, and we have a lot of checks and balances as well. So we have, because we have so many people with hands-on controlled substances, we keep them all in automated dispensing cabinets. We use QBEX here. And we have a main cabinet for storage in our dispensary. And then we have five others throughout our teaching hospital areas. And we use those. Well, they help with charging. We use them primarily for logging and tracking of our drugs and keeping them locked. So it's individual drug access. But then we also have training in place that we require as part of our onboarding orientation so that we ensure that everybody is getting an overview of our controlled substance policies and processes when they start. And before we give them their access to QBEX, we have them come and they have to train with us in person so we can talk through some of our policies and the key things that we watch for. And then we are checking drugs, I'd say almost every day that we're open. So 5 days a week, we go through and we will cycle count every drug that's been accessed, that's a control in our QBEX machine since the last time we did that, and make sure that those quantities look right. If we don't, we can then create a discrepancy with what's actually there. And a pharmacist goes in and looks and says, okay, here's the discrepancy. I can account for this for hub loss, or, oh, they emailed us, they messed up, and here's how we fix that. And then we document that. And that way we have logs, and we're doing that on a pretty much daily basis. So we keep up on any issues if we have to track those down. And then we have methods to do so where we have security cameras we can access if we have discrepancies. And we can figure out if it's an easy solution or if it's something we need to give the DEA a notice on, because we have 24 hours to make that decision from the time we discover it. And then we audit records. So we go through and look at a set number of records from every hospital service that used controlled substances, and we make sure that the documentation meets all the requirements. Here, we require a witness to administration. That's not a legal requirement that we have to have that, but because drugs get handed off, students administer them, and there's a lot of handoffs, changes, we want to make sure that we have that extra documentation that says this drug actually made it into the patient. So we have various paperwork methods that account for that. We have the blend of, we have some high technology like our dispensing cabinets, but then we have a lot of things that are still on paper. And so we have a mixture of that, which makes auditing a little harder than it would be in a fully electronic system, which is what human healthcare is, but it's what's feasible with our systems and here. And then we still have the need for paper logs for some things. You can't take a dispensing cabinet on an ambulatory vehicle. So we send ambulatory bags out with paper logs. We have processes for checking those, sending them in and out, so we can track all of those drugs. We help our veterinarians that have their own DEA licenses maintain those, keep them up to date, keep all their paperwork up to date, help with issues renewing. We provide all of our house officers with directions on here's how you get your state license, here's how you get your DEA license, here's how you keep it secure. And walk through all of that. And we're still continually evolving. It's looking like we're actually going to be working on making this even better going forward. One of the things we want to do is turn our controlled substance training into race approved CE for our doctors, because Illinois requires so many hours of controlled substance education for license renewal. So we're working to be able to offer that and do some more education while helping our doctors get the requirements they need for their licenses.
That is such a good idea, because then it's kind of like, okay, here you get CE, but then also you really have to take this and pay attention. I love that. And I also love just like the whole, I don't know, it's like a whole little controlled substance regulation ecosystem. I love it. What do you think are kind of like just some of the challenges day to day that you see just people just really struggle with, or, you know, that you find that kind of pop up and more frequently than others?
The record keeping is one of the biggest ones, making sure that you keep the records that you need to, and that you keep them long enough and you file them correctly. Those are things that the DEA is specific about, and those are things that it's important to have readily accessible if they show up. Now, the record keeping, and that's one of those, what's the goal here? The records that they require and the timeframes in which they keep them help aid if they need to do an investigation, whether that has anything to do with drug actually lost from your practice, or if it has to do with a case they're investigating that somehow weaves into your practice, unbeknownst to you. They might show up and they want records for that case. And they should be able to expect that they can get all of those required records for whatever time period your state says you have to keep them. Federal law is 2 years, so that's the minimum. Several states are more than that. And I think people get really bogged down in the details of the records. One of the things that I see gets missed a lot, though, is the separation of C2 records from C3 through 5 records. Mm-hmm. It seems like we should be able to just throw all of our invoices in together, but the regulations for C2s are different enough. And so in my head, I think of controlled substance regulations as the C2 regulations and the C3 through 5 regulations. To me, there's not a whole lot of difference on whether a drug is a C3 or a C4 from a regulatory standpoint, because they're essentially the same level of regulations. So that's how I remember those records can all go together. C2 records have to be separate. And that means your invoices when you receive drugs, C2s have to be separate. Your log sheets, C2s have to be separate. And so keeping those, whatever separate looks like, they can be in the same file cabinet and just separate files. And that's a mentality on the DEA as far as investigations and what records they need and want to access with that requirement. But that's one of those tricky things that I say, if it's important enough to document and it has to do with controlled substances, it's important enough to keep. Like our witnessing of a drug administration, not a legal requirement, therefore not something we have to keep, but we thought it was necessary to document. Therefore, it's necessary to keep.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's like, it's almost like, I think of like controlled substance logging as like a diary, basically from like the second it arrives in your practice to the second one that leaves, whether that is waste, administration, whatever that looks like. And so it's like your record keeping is that diary from start to finish. And so it's like, yes, keep all the records.
Yep, exactly. And okay, really, DEA compliance is preventative care for the practice.
Yes.
We talk to the client, it seems like it's cumbersome. It's a lot. It might require investment in technology or in extra staff to manage it. But like we talk to clients about how flea and tick preventatives and vaccines are worth the cost because it's more expensive to treat the issue. DEA compliance is worth the cost because if you have criminal issues or you have fines, those are so expensive and it's way less expensive to prevent them in the first place.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Cause you know, it's like one thing to like spend a little bit extra and a little bit more time to make sure your regulations are in compliance versus, you know, getting stuck with $1 million in fines. So what is that saying? Like an ounce of prevention is a pound of something like that. I don't know. The saying lost me.
I think it was an ounce of prevention is equal to a pound of cure.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Okay. So, and I also think controlled substances is one of these areas where people are like very afraid of, you know, but I like encourage people to, you know, to ask questions and learn more and, you know, just to, especially if you're like interested in inventory in general, and it's like, oh, I want to learn more. Like, you know, there are resources out there to like learn more so that you know, because I think it's like one thing to be like, ooh, I'm pretty sure we're not doing it right, but I'm also too scared to ask. And so it doesn't quite ever get progress made.
Right. And that is so true. And I find my DEA agents very helpful. And I find that if I go to them with questions, then they can proactively help me prevent issues. But I know that's not everyone's feeling. And so my recommendation is utilize your state vet med associations. At least ours has a good relationship and they'll call the DEA for you. If you don't want to call them yourself and because you're afraid you might land on their radar, and they'll help get answers for you if they don't already have them. So that's a great option to use. I also recommend look critically, like where are your gaps in things? You can have outside consultants do it. You could have, if you have a friend who also works in a vet hospital, have them walk through your processes and see if they can spot something that you may not notice. And go that route so you could get a second set of eyes on things. We had university auditors look at our controlled substances, and it was really helpful because it's like, oh, you know, I didn't think of that. That's just normal. So it was another set of eyes that raised questions like, oh, should I consider that? So that was really helpful. And then looking for CE and not just doing it from any one person or any one source, but finding a variety of them, because people are going to present things differently. And then also consider human controlled substance CE. It may not count for your vet race approval CE, but it is approved by some groups, so you can trust it's bias-free and appropriate. But human controlled substance management processes in hospitals is beyond anything that we're capable of doing in vet med right now, but it's really interesting to hear what they're doing. And it's sort of aspirational on the, okay, this is how closely they're tracking it. And there's several studies out there on the human side about drug diversion in healthcare. And the significance of it and the frequency of it. And then there's CE on how different hospital systems address that and their diversion programs. And so you can, I find, while it doesn't all apply, I can pluck out some really interesting tidbits that I want to consider going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, so when I actually first started managing inventory, I learned a lot from human health care and supply chain management, and it gave me a lot of inspiration for, you know, the systems that I've created for, you know, like in vet med. So I'm sure, you know, for human controlled substance, I'm sure it's like next level. So I'm sure it's like very interesting. Oh, well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have any kind of like final recommendation or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Jump into your controlled substance management sooner rather than later. Don't keep putting it off, and come up with a plan. It's hard to start, but chip away little by little. Okay, I'm going to work on my ordering process today. And maybe that's all you do this week, is you define your division of labor for ordering, but it's a start. And as you get more, it becomes a little less intimidating. And then you can fine tune. The blank page is the worst part. So start defining that.
Yeah, that's so smart. Okay. So again, thank you so much for joining. If listeners wanted to learn more about you, where can we follow along?
Best place to find me is on LinkedIn. I'm there under Lauren Eichstead Forsyth. And you can follow me there. And then you can also find sort of what we're up to at the University of Illinois. We have a medication dispensary page, and we share various resources and information, client handouts, not necessarily controlled specific, but drug related. So you can always access those as well.
Perfect. And I will link those both in the show notes at vetlogic.co/podcast. So Lauren, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It was such a pleasure, and I truly enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Inventory Nation podcast and spending your time with me. I know your time is valuable and in short supply, so it truly is an honor. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe or leave a review. Be sure to visit vetlogic.co/podcast to access the show notes and discover additional links and resources. See you next time.